Laner is clutching the massaging shower head and is directing a cold stream of water on her burned and blistered cheeks. As it turns out, Eloise, ever the impeccable hostess, had joined Laner and Cinderella in their laboratory to see if they needed their glasses refilled. Laner then insisted on slathering her with his spicy balm. Little did he know that Eloise had had a deep cleansing facial peel just a few hours before the party, leaving her skin ultra-vulnerable to any corrosive ointments. It was comforting for me to see that in the heedless anarchy of the moment, Laner had actually done the right thing and was correctly caring for her burns. There are two venerable maxims that rule the professional classes. For doctors, it is do no harm. And in the world of jurisprudence, it is anyone who represents himself in a court has a fool for a client. So, if you must be your own physician, do no harm and don't be a fool. Can you take the tetracycline meant for fish tanks? A patient came to the ER one day for treatment of an infection on her scalp. She had tried to treat it at home by taking the tetracycline for her fish tank. As it turns out, she actually didn't need antibiotics for her rash. Was this self-medicating ingenuity or insanity on her part? I wouldn't exactly call it ingenuity, because the other great idea she came up with was to rub toothpaste on her head. As for the fish tank tetracycline, it seems as though those tablets often contain the same dosage as your over-the-counter tablets, but I certainly cannot vouch for their purity. Logic says stick with the stuff you get from the pharmacy. Does cranberry juice cure urinary tract infections? Maybe. A study in JAMA, or the Journal of the American Medical Association, for all not in the know, demonstrated a significant reduction in the rate of urinary tract infections in older people who drank cranberry juice daily. We don't know exactly why, but the most likely answer is that some chemical in the juice prevents bacteria from sticking to the wall of the bladder. I know some people don't like cranberry juice, but since urinary tract infections can happen after sex, it's probably worth it to drink a little bitter cranberry juice instead of smoking a cigarette. Will yogurt cure a yeast infection if you put it inside? Yogurt may have some role in helping prevent yeast infections, but only when you put it in the correct orifice, your mouth. Yogurt does have some very interesting health properties. Some women find eating one cup of yogurt a day while taking antibiotics is helpful in preventing the yeast infections that often follow such treatment. However, yogurt alone will not cure vaginal yeast infections that are already in full bloom. Does candle flame remove earwax? Excessive amounts of earwax can cause decreased hearing or pain, but this is no reason to start lighting your head on fire. Ear candling, or coning, involves placing a cone-shaped device in the ear canal and, with the help of smoke or a burning wick, remove earwax. The companies that make these devices claim many other health benefits. The FDA and the Canadian government disagree, and both have come out against these fraudulent claims. In most cases, earwax will come out on its own, and if not, you should see your doctor. Avoid these silly products and save the cones for your ice cream. Is it smart to put butter on a burn? No. Save the butter for breakfast. Butter is the wrong thing to put on a burn. It will trap the heat in the skin and prolong the pain. Use cool water instead. I do have to say that there are some kitchen supplies that may be useful for the pain of a burn. Straight from the medical literature in India, boiled potato skins and honey. Why honey? Honey is sometimes used for its antibacterial effects. Boiled potato skins may seem to be an unusual treatment, but they maintain a moist environment. The best thing to do when you grab a hot pan is to cool your burn under running water and only after it has thoroughly cooled, apply an antibiotic ointment. For severe burns, you should go to your local ER. Does melatonin work for jet lag? Here is one for all the world travelers. Melatonin may be an effective solution for your problems with jet lag. A review of 10 studies on the use of melatonin concludes that 2 to 5 milligrams of melatonin taken at bedtime after arrival at your destination is effective and may be worth repeating for the next 2 to 4 days. This should be done in conjunction with non-drug measures, such as avoiding dehydration and alcohol, engaging in exercise and activity during daylight hours, eating well, sleeping well, and adjusting to the local time schedule for fighting the dreaded jet lag. Should you put a stake on a black eye? Ice is hardly as dramatic as a carefully placed porterhouse, but it does the same job. There is no magic in the beef, just cold and a little pressure. Keeping your head elevated and avoiding aspirin or ibuprofen, which can affect the ability of your blood to clot, also helps. The best idea is to avoid getting punched in the first place. Will toothpaste get rid of zits? There are many home remedies for skin ailments, and I've seen patients come to the emergency room covered in all sorts of creams and potions. Some common anti-zit home remedies people try concocting include baking soda, vinegar, coffee grounds, mercurochrome, a red substance no longer sold in this country, iodine, hemorrhoid cream, sugar, salt, and toothpaste. It is commonly believed that toothpaste on zits is an excellent home remedy. There are no scientific studies that I could find on the use of toothpaste for acne, but it may work to dry out those troublesome blemishes. But if you go the toothpaste route, there are some things to look out for. Perioral dermatitis is an eruption of discrete papules and pustules on an erythematous scaling base around the mouth. Fancy description for acne-like. It occurs almost exclusively in women between the ages of 20 and 35. The cause is unknown, but some people think that fluorinated toothpaste may be a factor. Fragrance allergies are also a danger with the toothpaste method. Balsam of Peru is an ingredient that has been known to cause allergic reactions, and cinnamic aldehyde in toothpastes has also been a common culprit. We say to stick with Clearasil. Is it dangerous to pop zits? In an unrelated but truly bizarre story, one night I was working in the ER, and a patient came in with a bandage over her jaw. I asked her what happened, and she was very timid in responding. She said she was embarrassed because she had picked her face over and over, which had caused an infection. I tried to calm her, told her that this was common, and asked her if I could take a look. When she removed her bandage, she revealed a 4x4-inch hole all the way down to her jawbone. She received some antibiotics and a careful psychiatric evaluation, and at no point did anyone say, "Didn't your mother tell you not to pick at your face?" As for zit popping, it definitely can lead to some complications. Squeezing pimples can actually push the zit-causing bacteria farther into the skin, causing more redness and swelling. It is also the most common cause of acne scarring. There is one more deadly complication from zit popping, which is called cavernous sinus thrombosis, a blood clot in the sinus cavity that runs between the sphenoid bone, the large bone at the base of the skull, and temporal bone located near the temple. The real danger zone for zit popping is an area that some people refer to as the triangle of death, an area stretching from the bridge of the nose to the corner of the mouth to the width of the jaw. The veins in this area drain into the cavernous sinus, and any severe infection in this area can cause cavernous sinus thrombosis. Squeezing zits in this part of your face can cause an infection and start this dangerous process. If someone is choking at a dinner party, can you do a tracheostomy with an oyster knife? Our friend Kim can do pretty much anything. She was like Martha Stewart before anyone had seen her bake her first cookie. Add to that a rugged edge that allows her to take on any project. She wanted to know the answer to this one, and we realized if anyone could do this, it would be her. She also wouldn't allow the procedure to interrupt her dinner party. A cricothyroidotomy, similar to a tracheostomy, is one of the most dramatic procedures done in the emergency room. This procedure is an emergency attempt to relieve a blocked airway. Remember the MASH episode where Father Mulcahy sticks a pen into some guy's throat to help him breathe? The oyster knife might work too, but definitely avoid trying this at home. Call 911 instead. Does urinating on a jellyfish sting stop the burn? We all saw that Friends episode. Come on, you watch it too. When Monica gets stung by a jellyfish, Joey remembers that peeing on a jellyfish sting takes the pain away. Monica can't bend that way, and Joey gets stage fright, leaving Chandler to save the day. Don't believe everything you see on TV. Most jellyfish stings cause only pain and numbness. The Australian box jellyfish is the most venomous and deadly of all stinging marine creatures. Approximately 20% of those stung by the box jellyfish will die. Portuguese man of war is also dangerous, but nothing compared to the box jellyfish. The following guideline can be applied to most jellyfish stings. The patient should remove any visible tentacles, using gloves if possible. The area of the sting should be rinsed with household vinegar. The acetic acid of the vinegar can block discharge of the remaining nematocysts, or stinging cells, on the skin, and should be applied liberally. If vinegar is not available, salt water can be used to wash off the nematocysts. In laboratory tests, urine, ammonia, and alcohol can cause active stinging cells to fire, which means applying them has the potential to make a minor sting worse. So urinating on a jellyfish sting is both gross and painful. Why is it bad to insert cotton swabs in your ears? Oh, the pleasure of the forbidden. Those things that you are not supposed to do are always so enticing. The ears, for the most part, do not require any routine cleaning. Ears are like a self-cleaning oven. With the help of gravity and body heat, earwax will gradually find its way out. If wax appears on the outer ear, a cotton swab may be used. If you can't help but go in farther, you are risking wax impaction or injury. If you do get wax impacted in your ear, you will be in pain and half deaf. There are over-the-counter preparations that can help relieve wax blockage, but warm water in a syringe often works best. As a last resort, you can see an ear doctor or come to the ER for a good cleaning. It is not uncommon for us to see patients who have violated these rules and come to see us to remove the tip of the cotton swab that has fallen off inside the ear. Don't worry, we are prepared. We also remove other things like cockroaches, beads, and pen caps, all of which we've pulled out of ears. Back online and instant messaging. Goldberg, we need a list of things for the cotton swabs in the ear question. Lehner, okay. Goldberg, things that you aren't supposed to do but can't resist. 6:05 p.m. Lehner, picking scabs. Goldberg, I love it when they bring the food to the table and say, hot plate, can't help but touch. Lehner, that's good, more. Goldberg, like Carrie says, more funny, boys. Making fun of the editor is one of those things that you are not supposed to do but can't resist. Lehner, more funny, like, how do you extract my size 9 old-school Adidas shell toe from the rectum of a book editor? More funny? Goldberg, should I leave that in? 6:10 p.m. Lehner, your call. might be a little harsh, but it's from the heart, Goldberg slightly. A dangerous little muscle, that heart of yours. Lehner, I'm trying to think of more not to do stuff. Goldberg, talk at a woman's breasts? Eat your young? Lehner, pick chicken pox? Goldberg, you just want to pick stuff. Lehner, pop pimples? Goldberg, talk with food in your mouth. Lehner, I knew some girls who loved popping each other's and their boyfriend's pimples. 6:30 p.m. Goldberg, I wish my lady would groom me like a monkey. Lehner, it's all in the eating. Monkeys combine grooming and eating. That's the special part, picking insects out of our fur and eating them, metaphorically speaking. Goldberg, you are at your best when speaking metaphorically. Lehner, thank you again. Goldberg, I gotta leave to go to the Knicks game soon. Lehner, can we get back at this tomorrow when you get back from the hospital? Goldberg, let's try to finish everything. Lehner, you have to go, right? We'll talk about it tomorrow. Goldberg, okay, let's talk tomorrow. Lehner, I'll look at the email, and we'll drive the final stake into the heart of this vampirus tomorrow. Is it dangerous to perform colonic irrigation on yourself? Colonic irrigation claims to help indigestion and yeast infections, control blood pressure, restore pH balance, reduce bad odors, clear colon blockage, induce proper blood clotting, stimulate production of white blood cells, help prevent gallstone production, clean the colon of parasites, help loss of concentration, and aid lung congestion, sinus congestion, skin problems, and nail fungus. Not a bad day's work, but not exactly proven. And yes, potentially dangerous. Colonic irrigation, or CI, is a procedure in which very large quantities of liquids are infused into the large intestine, or the colon, via the rectum through a tube. The purpose is to detoxify the body through the removal of accumulated waste from the colon. This may involve the use of 20 or more gallons of liquid. Liquids used in colonics may contain coffee, herbs, enzymes, or wheatgrass. The machines used for colon therapy are illegal unless used during conventional medical treatment. Colon therapy also can be dangerous. Complications include bowel perforation, heart failure from excessive fluid absorption, electrolyte imbalance, and several outbreaks of serious infections. One case linked to contaminated equipment caused amebiasis, a parasitic infection in 36 people. Meanwhile, 11:50 a.m., Lehner, this book is going to ruin both of us. The editor will probably get a huge promotion, and we'll end up in the subway wearing fedoras and playing Andean flute music. Goldberg, Andean flute music sounds appropriate for the theme music in a colonic ad. 11:55 a.m., Lehner, why are people so interested in colonics? Goldberg, seems insane to me. Who says it's supposed to be clean? That is, your colon. I sounded like Yoda there. Lehner, me too. Part of the wonderful Judeo-Christian legacy of self-loathing, you know, how we're essentially filthy inside. Goldberg, putrefaction. I feel like I am rotting inside today. Lehner, that's right. If you can't have a dirty colon, come on. Goldberg, good title for a pop song. Lehner, sounds good for Prince. Goldberg, imagine Britney Spears singing the Mark Lehner version of If You Can't Have a Dirty Colon, Come On. Great video, too. Lehner, I love tracking the doings of aging rock stars. Goldberg, some celebrity colonoscopy cameos. 12 p.m. Lehner, Rod Stewart's become the new Jim Nabors somehow. Goldberg, what is he up to now? I read something on page 6 about Elton John injecting himself with lamb's urine to lose weight. Lehner, Rod singing duets with Dolly Parton, Gershwin ballads, and children's songs. and doing an album with the Wiggles next. Wouldn't surprise me. Goldberg. They also said Michael Jackson reportedly used to keep his weight down with lots of self-administered enemas, but later needed a tampon to control embarrassing leakage. Lehner. How do you get a lamb to pee in a cup? Goldberg. That is going to be my next job after the book. Catheterizing lambs. Lehner. Jackson should let himself get fat like Elvis did. Is that true about Elton John and lamb urine? Goldberg. Page 6, my friend. Check the New York Post. Isn't everything in the newspaper true? Lehner. Yes. Goldberg. Maybe we can add the lamb's urine question in as an urban legend. Lehner. Doesn't something have to be in the public subconsciousness for more than a day to qualify as an urban legend? Does breast milk cure warts? Here's one from the June 2004 New England Journal of Medicine. A cream containing an ingredient of human breast milk appears to be an effective treatment for stubborn warts. The key ingredient of the cream is a compound called alpha-lactalbumin oleic acid. Its Swedish creators have nicknamed the cream Hamlet for human alpha-lactalbumin made lethal to tumor cells. This may lead to other areas of research, as certain types of warts or human papillomavirus, HPV, can be linked to cervical cancer. No word yet on whether Starbucks will be introducing a tall decaf breast latte. If you get bitten by a snake, should you suck out the venom? I love a good Western, and nothing could be more badass than biting into a snake wound and spitting out the venom. Of course, this would be followed by some whiskey and a good gunfight. Unfortunately, this is no longer an accepted practice. Sucking at a snake bite is not only ineffective, but could lead to an infection at the wound site. According to the American Red Cross, these steps should be taken after a snake bite. 1. Wash the bite with soap and water. 2. Immobilize the bitten area and keep it lower than the heart. 3. Get medical help. Toxicology experts might also suggest applying a tourniquet loosely above the bite to prevent the venom from spreading. This must be done with caution, as the tourniquet itself can cause problems if it cuts off the blood flow entirely. The person then needs to be transported rapidly to an emergency room. Antivenin is available for a variety of different snakes. Other treatments include antibiotics and surgery. Of the estimated 120 different types of snakes found in the United States, about 20 are poisonous. Most bites occur in the southwestern part of the nation, but they can even occur in New York City. In New York State, there are 3 species of poisonous snakes: the timber rattlesnake, the Massasauga rattlesnake, and the copperhead. In the city, however, most bites occur from snakes that are kept as pets. What are hiccups, and how do you get rid of them? Doctors are known for using complicated words that make them sound either extremely intelligent or really out of touch with what most people can understand. The medical word for hiccups, syngultus, is a perfect example of when physicians sound ridiculous. Hiccups are caused when the diaphragm becomes irritated and pushes air rapidly up in such a way that it makes an irregular sound. Some things that irritate the diaphragm and cause hiccups are distension of the stomach from food, alcohol, or air, sudden changes in gastric temperature, or use of alcohol and/or tobacco in excess. Hiccups also can be caused by excitement or stress. While most cases of the hiccups last only a few minutes, some cases of the hiccups can last for days or weeks. This is very unusual, though, and it's usually a sign of another medical problem, such as injections near the diaphragm, hiatal hernias, severe gastroesophageal reflux disease, or GERD, or a tumor irritating the nerves in the chest. Hiccups lasting longer than 1 month are termed intractable or incurable. The longest recorded attack of hiccups is 6 decades. Doctors sometimes use the antipsychotic drug Thorazine to treat intractable hiccups. If you don't want to go the antipsychotic route, you could try one of these simpler but unproven cures. 1. Breathing into a paper bag. 2. Drinking out of a cup from the side opposite your mouth. 3. Holding your breath. 4. Eating a teaspoon of sugar. 5. Sucking on a wedge of lime or lemon. 6. Drinking a glass of water with a straw while you plug your ears with your fingers. 7. Pulling the top of your hair for 1 to 2 minutes. 8. Placing a cotton swab in the roof of your mouth and gently rubbing. 9. Pulling hard on your tongue. Does bathing in tomato juice remove the smell of a skunk? For those of you who were watching TV in 1970, you may have seen episode 8 of the first season of The Partridge Family, when a skunk finds its way onto the family bus and turns the partridges into stinkers. Reuben remembers that tomato juice can remove the skunk odor, so the family bathes in it. All is well until the family dog gets them covered again. Without time to take another tomato bath, the band plays their concert at a children's hospital from inside a glass-enclosed operating room. That's great TV. The major molecules that make skunk spray smell are sulfur compounds. It is a common belief that tomato juice removes the smell, but there is no scientific evidence to support this claim. The tomato juice probably just tricks the nose into not recognizing the skunk smell through the overpowering red gravy scent. One recommended treatment for pets is 1 quart 3% hydrogen peroxide, 1 cup baking soda, and 1 teaspoon of mild dishwashing detergent. People can try the same, but be careful. The peroxide can have a bleaching effect. Does eating fresh parsley cure bad breath? Parsley was used in the past in medicinal recipes for cure-alls, general tonics, poison antidotes, and kidney and bladder stone relief. Parsley is rich in vitamins and minerals, particularly vitamins A and C. It is also said to be rich in antioxidants. Parsley also can relieve bad breath, although there are no medical studies linking it to halitosis. It is good to note that there are two varieties of parsley, curly-leafed and flat-leafed, which has the stronger flavor. Therefore, the flat-leaf kind is better to cure your chili dog breath. Does warm milk really help you sleep? There doesn't appear to be a great deal of research on the role of milk as a sleep aid. Milk is certainly a simpler alternative to prescription sleeping pills or drinking so much you just pass out, and there are several theories as to why it might work. Milk contains tryptophan, the same ingredient that makes everyone sleepy after Thanksgiving dinner. You do remember food coma, don't you? The warmth of the milk can have a minimal effect on your body temperature and sometimes makes sleep a little easier. Milk also contains melatonin, which is a natural sleep aid. One company, Nighttime Milk in England, even sells milk from cows milked at night when the melatonin is increased. The milk is marketed as a sleep aid, proving that people will buy anything today. Chapter 5. Drugs and Alcohol. Eloise, with her wounds cleaned and dressed, is back in business and is refreshing glasses and making small talk. Lehner appears wounded from his laboratory mishap and is quietly sitting cross-legged in the corner, sullenly nursing the dregs of his bottle of tequila. I've never condoned casual drug use, but I almost feel compelled to spike the punch bowl with a strong sedative and sneak out to find my way home. I resist this evil urge and feel better until I am confronted again by the indefatigable but once fat guy, Jeremy Burns. Jeremy, aside from his Atkins obsession, has never grown out of his penchant for fraternity hijinks. Eloise offers him one of her signature frozen daiquiris, but Jeremy only wants a jello shot, a beer bong, or some ecstasy. Eloise turns her nose up at his boorish request, and he turns to me to plead for a prescription for some medical-grade marijuana. I explain to him that prescription pot is not available in New York, and that I wouldn't give it to him anyway. Jeremy is not ready to give up and asks, "Then can you get me any of that shit that Rush Limbaugh takes?" "Oxycontin," I reply. "Yeah, yeah," he says. "Oh, and also some of that stuff that Matthew Perry and Brett Farr do." "Vicodin?" I reply again. Jeremy says that he already has plenty of Vicodin and asks if maybe I can just get him a little ketamine. I am becoming exasperated, and I realize that I have an opening. "Jeremy, you know that ketamine is a potent horse tranquilizer. And that guy over there is a veterinarian," I say, pointing to a portly, balding gentleman in the next room. Jeremy rushes off as I breathe a sigh of relief. With a culture dedicated to the use and abuse of caffeine, nicotine, alcohol, and an endless array of illegal substances, questions abound about the safest and quickest ways in which we can intoxicate ourselves and how to avoid the dreaded hangover. Beer before liquor, never sicker. Liquor before beer, never fear. This one isn't all that clear. Or maybe it's because of those drinks we just had. The biggest problem with this rhyme is that nobody seems to remember how it goes. As for the science, there's no research to prove or disprove it. One theory about this little ditty attempts to explain that the carbonation in beer causes increased alcohol absorption. There is no proof that this is true. Nor should you believe that coffee will help you with a hangover or that bread will absorb the alcohol in your system. Only time will cure your pain as you wait for the alcohol to leave your bloodstream. Intoxication is defined as a blood alcohol level of 100 milligrams per deciliter, 0.10%. In adults, the level usually falls about 15 to 20 milligrams per deciliter per hour. Everyone metabolizes differently, but on average, it would take about 6 to 8 hours for you to return to normal from a mild drunken state. Here are various blood alcohol concentrations and their attendant symptoms. 0.02%, lightheaded. 0.05%, mild euphoria. 0.08%, loss of critical judgment. 0.10%, lack of coordination and balance. 0.15%, disorientation. 0.20%, vomiting. 0.30%, drunken stupor. 0.40%, coma. 0.45% and above, death. Simply put, alcohol causes intoxication, so the more you drink, the sicker you get. It doesn't have anything to do with the order in which you tend to chug your beer or wine. As for the dreaded hangover that follows, it is caused mainly by dehydration and interrupted sleep. The sleep and water that will ultimately cure you are not as interesting as some of these famous hangover cures. 1. The prairie oyster. Olive oil, tablespoon of tomato ketchup, 1 egg yolk, salt and pepper, Tabasco, Worcestershire sauce, vinegar or lemon juice. 2. Cold pizza. 3. IV fluids. Helps to date an MD or paramedic. 4. The hair of the dog that bit you. In other words, the blessed Bloody Mary. 5. Vitamins B and C. 6. And the most effective, and most expensive, kidney dialysis. Can poppy seeds make you test positive for heroin? If it's the Jewish holiday Purim and you plan on competing in the Olympics, you may want to think twice before gorging on poppy seed humantashen. Eating enough poppy seeds can cause your urine to test positive for opiates. It's difficult to say how many poppy seeds you need to eat to fail your drug test, but some reports have stated that 3 poppy seed bagels, for example, could generate a positive test result. Pastries and cookies that contain heavy amounts of poppy seeds, like Humantaschen, could also lead to a positive test. There is an additional test that looks for certain chemicals present in heroin that are not present in poppy seeds. So, your athletic future really will depend on the exact test you are taking. What is the poppy seed heroin connection? Cultivated poppies are the source of opium, from which morphine and heroin are produced. Why do you get the munchies when you are stoned? Answer: to keep Domino's and Frito-Lay in business. Marijuana is the most commonly used illicit drug in the United States. The main active chemical in marijuana is THC, delta-9-tetrahydrocannabinol, or the high causer. THC falls in the category of chemicals called cannabinoids. A study in the April 2001 issue of Nature helps us to better understand how marijuana causes users to have an increased appetite, the famous munchies. Molecules called endocannabinoids, marijuana-like chemicals present in our own brain, bind with receptors in the brain and activate hunger. These endocannabinoids in the hypothalamus of the brain then activate cannabinoid receptors that are responsible for maintaining food intake. The chemicals from marijuana bind to these cannabinoid receptors and cause the munchies. Sound complicated? Maybe you're too stoned to understand. Go eat some cookie dough. Can a hair sample be used in a drug test? Hold the Rogaine. If you are bald, there may be another advantage besides the cost savings on hair products. You won't have any hair to offer for your drug test. As drugs are ingested into the body, they circulate in a person's bloodstream. Trace amounts of these drugs, or the drug metabolites, are deposited in the hair follicle. As the hair grows, they remain stored in the core of the hair shaft. When a person is tested, samples are taken at various levels in the hair shaft so that a reasonably accurate approximation can be made of how long ago a particular drug was used. Drugs or drug metabolites cannot be washed, bleached, or flushed out of the hair follicle. The major practical advantage of hair testing compared with urine testing for drugs is that it can show that drug use occurred in the past weeks to months, depending on the length of the hair shaft, versus within only the past 2 or 4 days for other tests. Hair analysis is the least invasive of the testing methods, but might not reveal recent use. Blood analysis is the most accurate, but definitely invasive. Urine analysis is typically the least expensive and can detect infrequent or a recent single use. Urine analysis is the most commonly used form of drug testing. So, if you constantly hit the bong, you might want to consider shaving your head. Will a shot of bourbon cure a cold? There has been much discussion and research over the years on the health benefits of alcohol. In the 1920s, the Guinness is Good for You campaign in the United Kingdom made people believe that this famous Irish stout had health properties. The slogan stemmed from intense scientific market research. People told the company that they felt good after a pint, and the slogan was born. Echinacea, vitamin C, zinc, and chicken soup, as well as a stiff belt, have all been postulated to prevent or cure the common cold. Unfortunately, there's no strong evidence for any of these choices. There are many other home remedies, several of which include brandy or whiskey. A friend has her own recipe combining vodka and orange juice into a screwdriver as her own special cold cure. Most likely, the buzz just helps you forget how bad you feel. Does putting someone in a shower or giving him or her coffee stop a drug overdose? Alcohol is the most common drug that leads people to throw their friends in the shower or force-feed them coffee. Time is the only thing that will sober up a drunk person. Coffee, showers, exercise, sweating it out, fresh air, or any other method will not increase the rate at which alcohol is eliminated from the body. The liver just needs the time to metabolize the alcohol. As for other, more hardcore drugs, the coffee won't help, but keeping someone awake until help arrives could be a lifesaver. Heroin and other opiates cause you to stop breathing, and this leads to cardiac arrest. Remember, coffee is only a temporary measure, and medical help should be sought for any drug overdose. If someone stops breathing, you should begin CPR. The shower is probably unnecessary and a big waste of precious time. Why do you throw up when you drink too much? Vomiting from excessive drinking is simply your body's way of getting rid of the toxins in alcohol quickly. Vomiting is not a bad thing in this case, but repeated hurling can lead to potentially life-threatening dehydration and electrolyte imbalances. There's also the danger of choking on vomit, like the guy from Led Zeppelin. The urge to vomit comes from two anatomically and functionally separate units, a vomiting center and a chemoreceptor trigger zone. The vomiting center, which has overall control of vomiting, is located in the part of the brain called the medulla. The chemoreceptor trigger zone, which sends signals to the vomiting center, is found in the fourth ventricle of the brain. The ventricles are a system of four communicating cavities in the brain that are filled with cerebrospinal fluid. Alcohol probably acts on the chemoreceptor trigger zone. In the hospital, vomiting is referred to as emesis, but many doctors prefer these more colorful terms. Puke, barf, uneat, blow chow, ride the porcelain bus, pray to the porcelain god, technicolor yawn, toss your cookies, lose your lunch, feed the fish, spill the groceries. Does taking ecstasy cause you to lose your memory? This is a question that gets asked a lot, both because of the increasing popularity of ecstasy and the fact that people keep forgetting that they asked in the first place. So, yes, ecstasy probably does cause memory loss. Ecstasy, or MDMA, which is an abbreviation for 3,4-methylenedioxymethamphetamine, is a synthetic psychoactive drug chemically similar to the stimulant methamphetamine and the hallucinogen mescaline. Some refer to it as a designer amphetamine. One of the major results from the use of ecstasy is that both in short-term and long-term use, it could have serious effects on brain cells. Specifically, ecstasy harms neurons that release serotonin, a brain chemical thought to play an important role in regulating memory and other important functions. Case reports and interviews with ecstasy users report memory loss, depression, alterations in sleep, and anxiety. Memory deficits seem to persist even after stopping the use of ecstasy. Does drinking kill brain cells? In the process of researching this book, the authors had a working dinner, and in the course of our hard work, we consumed large quantities of beer, wine, and tequila. As we stumbled down the street, Mark insisted that he was fine to take the train home. Better judgment prevailed, and I wrestled him into a cab. The cab drove away, and I started to walk home. A block later, I came upon the cab and found Mark fumbling with his empty wallet in the back seat. I opened the door. Mark, with no memory of our evening, said, "What are you doing here?" Alcohol surely kills brain cells. To properly answer this question, we must separate light to moderate drinking from heavy drinking. We also need to separate temporary from permanent damage. In general, alcohol doesn't specifically kill brain cells, but alcohol damages the dendrites, the small branches that extend from the cells and receive information. The mechanism of action for intoxication is multifactorial, but the end result is the slurred speech, clumsiness, slow reflexes, and loss of inhibition that we associate with being drunk. This damage isn't permanent in light to moderate usage. This means you can have 1 to 7 drinks a week and be just fine. Heavy alcohol use does clearly cause neurological damage. CT scans of chronic alcoholics can show brain atrophy, and studies have shown that heavy use damages retrospective memory. Alcoholism can produce Wernicke-Korsakoff syndrome, which is caused by deficiency of the B vitamin thiamine. Alcohol decreases the absorption of this vitamin, and alcoholics also don't have the healthiest diets. Patients with this condition have symptoms such as confusion, delirium, disorientation, inattention, memory loss, and drowsiness. If thiamine is not given promptly, the syndrome may progress to stupor, coma, and death. Why does the bed spin after a long night at the bar? Nothing is worse than the moment when you hit the sheets and the room starts to spin. Trying to explain why this happens causes almost as much dizziness. The vestibular system is a complicated network of passageways and chambers within the inner ear, all of which work together to control equilibrium and balance. Inside, there are tubes and sacs that contain different fluids, each of which has a different composition. When you are healthy, and both sides of your vestibular system are functioning properly, both sides send symmetrical impulses to the brain. When someone gets very intoxicated, the alcohol changes the density of the blood, and this affects the intricate system of balance. That is when the spinning starts. This is very similar to the condition called vertigo. Why do you snore so loud when you are drunk? There is a common serenade in any emergency room. The coarse snore of the regular alcoholic fills the air. Normally, we just ignore it, but sometimes too much alcohol actually impedes the breathing process. We fix this easily with a short, small rubber tube in the nose, an aptly named nasal trumpet. Alcohol increases snoring by relaxing the muscles that hold the throat open, allowing the soft palate tissue and uvula to flutter more as air passes. Is red wine really good for your health? Finally, some good news. Historically, there has been a belief that wine has medicinal properties. Hippocrates and Thomas Jefferson both considered wine an important part of their health regimens. Louis Pasteur, the famous French biologist, said, "Wine is the most healthful and hygienic of beverages." There now is an enormous amount of research about what has been called the French paradox, that despite a diet rich in fats, there is a lower than expected prevalence of cardiovascular disease among the Gauls. Scientific studies have linked this surprising fact to the moderate consumption of alcohol, specifically red wine. Red wine has also been linked to a reduced risk of some cancers, arterial sclerosis, heart disease, and even the common cold. So drink a whole bottle tonight. Your bed will spin, but you probably won't have a heart attack. Does marijuana help glaucoma? There are some important medical uses for marijuana, and some of these lead to solid arguments for legalization. However, the use of marijuana for glaucoma does not appear to have any benefit over available medications. Marijuana does reduce pressure in the eye, but in order to sustain this reduction, you would have to smoke about 10 to 12 joints a day. Your eye pressure might be lower, but you will be too stoned to get anything else accomplished except naked guitar playing, gluttonous pork rind consumption, or deriving profound meaning from Rob Schneider films. Should you drink brandy when you have frostbite? The arrival of the Saint Bernard with the little cask around its neck is a heartwarming image, but drinking alcohol to warm yourself or prevent frostbite doesn't make any medical sense, we're sorry to report. Alcohol consumption actually can be dangerous in these conditions as it decreases blood circulation and thus can enhance heat loss and impair shivering. Can you get high from licking a toad? Poor, sad toads. They always seem to take a back seat to the frogs. Frogs get kissed and turn into princes, and toads just get to cause warts. Well, here's some good news for toads. Toads do not cause warts. Toads do, however, produce a protective substance in the parotid gland behind the eyes. This toxin can make animals such as dogs very sick and can be irritating to the human eye. But some people go way beyond touching toads and actually lick them in an attempt to get high from a psychedelic substance supposedly found on its skin. The species known as the bufo toad does have a psychedelic substance on its skin. This substance is similar to serotonin and LSD and can cause hallucinations. Be careful when trying this method because some people have been arrested for toad licking. Why do people seem more attractive to you when you are drunk? Straight from the Department of Psychology at the University of Glasgow, a paper entitled "Alcohol Consumption Increases Attractiveness Ratings of Opposite Sex Faces, a Possible Third Route to Risky Sex," thus proving that beer goggles do exist. Feel free to use this paper to excuse your bad behavior. Chapter 6. Bathroom Humor. Lehner seems to have rebounded from his brief period of remorse and sorrow, and is now back to his crazed ways. Tequila in hand, he is delivering a rambling, quasi-coherent lecture about cultural differences in post-defecation hygiene. The audience is appalled, yet raptly entranced by his scholarly, scatological soliloquy. As Lehner continues, a hand pops up in the back of the room. The hand belongs to Joel Blake, a celebrity orthodontist, who starts to ask a question but begins to stammer as tears well up in his eyes. Lehner moves through the crowd with the style and empathic grace of Oprah Winfrey, grabs his hand and says, "It's okay, Joel. You can tell us. You are among friends." "I wipe standing up," Joel blurts out. There's a cackle from the gallery, but Lehner silences the offender with an icy stare. "We need to honor everyone's way of wiping," Lehner says serenely, as he hugs Joel. The bathroom and all that occurs behind closed doors may be the final taboo. Yet when placed in a comforting environment or in a locker room, people will share their secrets, often to unfortunate results. Can you drink your own urine? Thanks to our wonderful democratic society, you can do whatever you want. The better question is, why would you want to drink your own piss? Drinking small amounts of your own urine is probably safe. It is made up of 95% water, 2.5% urea, and 2.5% salt, other minerals, hormones, and enzymes. Actually, some folks consider it to have therapeutic properties. Ask the Chinese Association of Urine Therapy. They say urine is sterile, antiseptic, and non-toxic. For serious yoga practitioners, drinking one's urine is called amaroli. One of the most famous users of urine therapy was the Prime Minister of India from 1977 to 1979, Morarji Desai. At the celebration of his 99th birthday, Desai attributed his longevity to drinking urine on a daily basis. But we plan on sticking to morning coffee, a good glass of Cabernet, and an occasional Yoo-hoo, even if it knocks a year or two off our lifespans. Why can you ignite a fart? An average fart is composed of about 59% nitrogen, 21% hydrogen, 9% carbon dioxide, 7% methane, and 4% oxygen. Less than 1% of its makeup is what makes a fart stink. The temperature of a fart at its time of creation is 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. Farts have been clocked at a speed of 10 feet per second. A person produces about half a liter of farts a day. Women fart as much as men. The gas that makes your farts stink is the hydrogen sulfide gas. This gas contains sulfur, which is the smelly component. The more sulfur-rich your diet, the more your farts will stink. Some foods that cause really smelly farts include beans, cabbage, cheese, and eggs. Also soda. Most people pass gas about 14 times a day. All are important facts, but back to the question. Is it really possible to ignite farts? The answer to that is yes. The flammable character of farts is due to hydrogen and methane. The proportions of these gases depend largely on the bacteria that live in the human colon that digest or ferment food that has not been absorbed by the gastrointestinal tract before reaching the colon. There is some danger associated with igniting flatulence. Fraternity guys don't seem to care. Why do you get all pruney after a long bath? There is nothing like a long soak in a bath to relax your soul. The problem is that you have to deal with the ghastly sight of your hands and feet after exiting. The simple answer for why this occurs is that our outer layer of skin, the epidermis, absorbs a little bit of water when we soak too long in the tub.